Kia ora and welcome to Emmons Podcast, episode 278. Today is Wednesday, April 18, 2012. Well, the fact that I'm podcasting on a Wednesday is a bit of a surprise in itself after I podcasted on a Monday, which is also unusual. The main reason I did that is because I knew that we were having an electrician coming to work on the house yesterday, which I'll talk about later on. And I knew it would be noisy, and it was. So I'm glad I decided that. But I figured, oh, well, I might as well just do another one today and just get two in 1 week. How about that? Woohoo! Clearly, we're all go around in this household, and it is Wednesday, so this Wednesday's child is full of go. Actually, I was born on a Wednesday. I don't know if I mentioned that before, but I don't necessarily believe I was really full of woe because I was born on a Wednesday. I mean, I didn't have any say in the matter, did I? Things are going along here now. We are getting some stuff done. I talked last time about some of the things we were going to do around the house, and we've actually started that. We, as I said, we had the electrician come on Tuesday, and he put in extractor fans in the bathroom, the ensuite. Ensuite in the U.S., well, where I come from, was called a master bathroom. And it never had it before. In New Zealand, bathrooms do not need to have an extractor fan. Unless they don't have a window, which of course these, well, they do. I say of course because they didn't have an extractor fan, so of course they had a window, you see. So that's called passive ventilation if there's a window. And these both have windows, and so they had passive ventilation. But, you know, when all the family was here at Easter, they were all taking showers, and one of our young nieces, she's just about to turn 11, she took a rather long shower, as some teens do, and with all the other people taking showers as well, the walls were actually wet when they were all done. So that said to us, no, we better get an extractor fan. So we did. And I told you about the moving the light switch, and the light switch in my office was moved because it was originally behind the door. Long story, basically, the first owner changed the direction the door swings after the wiring had been done. So I can't tell you how long. Well, I can tell you how long. It's been 6 years. Every time I've gone to turn on the light in my office, I've cursed that stupid light switch because it's behind the door, and nobody could stand it. So now it's where it should be. It's right next to the door as you walk in. You can see it as you walk in now. So I'm very excited about that. And I also told you that I took the old shelving and stuff out of the wardrobe in the guest room to get ready to put in the new system. Well, today I filled the holes. Left by the screw holes. They have these, what do they call those? Plastic plugs you put in wallboard to put the screw into. Not the kind that actually are like a giant screw that grip the wallboard, but the other kind you kind of tap in. There's a name for them, and I can't remember what it is. Those, and some of the hooks that the shelving was held on with were very similar, except those I could pull out, well, mostly because there was a hook to pull out. I couldn't pull out the other wall plugs. And so what I do is I take a ball-peen hammer and I gently tap them in, not all the way, but just so that there's a dimple, and then that gives me something to fill. And I take a little bit of the wall paint and I mix it with the compound so that it's tinted the same color as the paint, so I don't need so much paint to cover it. In fact, I may not even bother to paint because it's in a wardrobe after all. And so I did that first coat this morning, and then I did the second one this afternoon when I got home, and I've just been out and about. I went and looked at office desks today, although I didn't buy one. I did look at them, and my plan is to buy one so that I've got somewhere to put all the stuff that's on my desk, and then I'm going to take everything off my desk and photograph it so I can put it online to sell. So that's the plan. That's what we've been doing. I said that we were talking about how we were going to fit storage under the house, and we're talking about that a little more seriously. We've got some actual ideas now, which is a step in the right direction. We haven't reached any decision on when we're going to bring the storage box back so that we can get everything, but we do at least have a plan for how we're going to attack it. If we had known that we'd end up bringing the box back and we weren't going to be moving, we would have packed those boxes differently. But as it is, we were just packing it up to move it. You know, you just sort of pack everything up and away it goes, as opposed to packing up stuff that you want to keep for whatever reason, but you don't need ready access to or easy access to, and stuff that you do need ready and easy access to. So when the boxes come back, we're going to take some of the boxes that we bought that would have been for packing to move, and we will use those to as we unpack the boxes to repack them into two separate areas, one, you know, things we need ready access to, and the other, things that can be stored. And well, actually, there'll probably be a third of things we can get rid of altogether, which hopefully will be a chunk of that stuff. Because when you move, you don't... Oh, Sunny has to make an appearance every episode. Anyway, when you move, you don't take time to sort through the things you're going to keep and the things you're going to get rid of. And we certainly didn't do that before this whole process began. So today I thought I would share a few items from the news because I haven't been able to talk about that lately, obviously. And there's, there are two main things, I suppose, that are going on. In the news, there's always a lot of things going on, but one of them is the ongoing story of Christchurch and the rebuild thereof. Today it was announced in the news that demolition has been ordered for QE2 Park, which is a stadium in Christchurch. And it was the home of the 1974 Commonwealth Games, and it will be torn down. The swimming pool complex is in a different building, and apparently it was fine. But the stadium itself was heavily damaged in the earthquake, and it's been closed ever since. So that will now be torn down. But it's interesting because the Christchurch also has a brand new stadium, the name of which escapes me right now, which has been closed ever since the earthquake. It was a brand new stadium and was ready to open or ready to be used, especially for the Rugby World Cup. And they couldn't because of severe liquefaction in the field and all sorts of other issues with the structure itself. As far as I know, no decision has been reached about that. But somehow the government managed to find the money to build a temporary stadium so that they could... So the Canterbury Crusaders could play and they could have a test match there of some sort or other. I don't know really what it was. But it was basically so they could have this rugby stadium there while the red zone, the center, the heart of Christchurch, if you will, is still basically in ruins. And there are plenty of people who thought that the priorities there were a little bit screwed up. But be that as it may. The other thing that's been going on in recent weeks is that it apparently has been decided... I say apparently because there's still a little equivocation on this, that the Christchurch Cathedral, which is an icon building, landmark for Christchurch, is to be completely demolished. They have said that it was more severely damaged than they had first thought and that there was no way to save it. And so they were going to completely demolish it. They were doing at this stage anyway, they're still doing a controlled demolition where they're taking the bits off so that they can be used again, I suppose, in the new cathedral, whatever it ends up being. In the meantime, they've decided to build a $5 million cardboard cathedral. Every time I read this or see this, I just think it sounds bizarre. But it's a temporary cathedral. They're going to use it for about 10 years while the new permanent cathedral is built. But it's going to be built with cardboard tubes and timber beams and structural steel and concrete for the strength and all that. But they say that it could last up to 20 years. And it will be, earthquake resistant, certainly. But they say it's renewable and earth friendly and blah, 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 blah. You know, all the sorts of hype they give. And they say it'll be a draw in itself. Well, whatever. It kind of looks like a ordinary church to me, although it will hold 700, which is a bit more than a typical church these days. But, it's apparently going to be built on the site of another Anglican church in Christchurch that was demolished after the earthquake called St. John's, which I remember seeing pictures of it, but I've never been to Christchurch City. I've only been as far as the airport. So it doesn't mean anything to me, but it might mean something to my South Island listeners or people who have been there. That church was demolished, and it's right across the street from the CTV building, which is where most of the lives were lost in the earthquake. So that's kind of a weird thing in itself. But the dean of the cathedral, and I've forgotten what her name is. I think she's the dean. Anyway, the person who's in charge of this anyway, she said that it was a place of life across the street from a place of death or something, and it was supposed to be about, you know, the Christian ideal somehow. I thought she was stretching a bit. But as all this is going on, there are folks back in the motherland who are talking about how Britain should come to the rescue and come up with the money to restore, well, rebuild, basically, the Christchurch Cathedral as it originally was, I imagine, using as much of the original material as possible. Now, I don't know how on earth that could be accomplished. Because, first of all, there would have to be a massive fundraising effort in Britain. There's no way that New Zealand could ever afford it. Because, I mean, I read one estimate that it would cost $100 million to fix the building. And, it could be a lot less. But if let's just say it's $100 million. There's no way New Zealand can afford $100 million for one stupid church. I mean, I'm sorry, with all due respect to people in Christchurch and Anglicans and whatever else, $100 million for one building seems to be a bit excessive. So it would take assistance from outside of New Zealand. And there's this move, and some people in Britain are saying it would be a chance for Britain to pay back New Zealand for its generosity in World War II and afterwards. And, well, yeah, maybe so. But I quite frankly can't see it taking off. As much as I personally would like to see the cathedral restored, unless people in Britain and maybe Anglicans in the U.S. as well take it on board as a project and raise the money to do it, it's just not going to happen because New Zealand can't afford it. And, you know, when I talked before about the leaky homes crisis, any hope that there ever would be that central government would pick up the entire cost for the crisis were wiped out in the earthquake as well, because the earthquake is going to be so hugely expensive that there's just no way there's going to be money for, well, much of anything else. Unless, of course, you've got the money to buy things, buy laws, which is the main political storm sweeping across New Zealand at the moment. The story isn't that new, essentially. The current government of Prime Minister John Key wants to change the Gambling Act of 2003 to allow Sky City Casino here in Auckland to add something like 500 more pokie machines, which are slot machines in other parlance, in exchange for them building and running an international convention center here in Auckland. Now, there are so many things wrong with this deal. First of all, problem gambling is a real problem in Auckland in particular, but throughout New Zealand. I think it was the old Auckland City Council, actually, put a sinking lid on the number of pokie machines that were allowed in bars and pubs and things, clubs, so that there couldn't be any more, and eventually the number of them would reduce. Well, this, of course, blows that out of the water, although John Key has used that as one of the, justifications for allowing Sky City to have more, because there will be fewer up in other places. Now, this makes no sense to me, because there's no competition. They're all at the casino. They're not, you know, somewhere else where they might have better deals or better odds or something. But nevertheless, that's one of the justifications he's used. And at one point, it had been widely reported that he brought this idea up. Then I saw something in the news where he was saying, "Oh they brought it up." So I don't know. I don't know what the real truth is. But the issue here, well, there's two issues. First, the site where they're going to put it, it's across the street from the existing casino, and it's right next to where the headquarters of Television New Zealand is. And in that block are a whole bunch of studios, including the studios for a program called Good Morning, which I think I have probably talked about before, certainly on my blog I have. And including the studio, it's the studio where that is made, and they just moved production to Auckland from Wellington. Now the government wants to tear down the studio and everything else that's on that block to make room for this convention center. Now, there's so many things wrong with this. The first one is, this National Party is supposed to be about how the private market should be doing things on behalf of the people, and the free market should deliver things. Government shouldn't intervene. It shouldn't get involved in stuff that the free market can deliver. That's their basic economic mantra. Unless, of course, there's something to be gained for them. in which case, they are more than happy to sell laws to the highest bidder. And that's exactly what they're going to do. They are going to change the law to benefit Sky City specifically in order to get this convention center, when there are apparently at least four other parties who are interested in building this convention center. They're ignoring all of those alternative deals that the free market might deliver in exchange for this one for Sky City. And it makes you wonder, who has Sky City been giving largesse to? And there was controversy recently where certain people in the media were found to have been favored by Sky City with special things. One of them is a guy named Mike Hosking, who is an alternate presenter on a program on television in New Zealand, and he's now banned from reporting on anything to do with Sky City, wisely. But there are others as well, and certain members of the current government have been wined and dined and so forth by Sky City. And although there's nothing that they did that's illegal, and I'm not trying to suggest there was, it certainly doesn't look good. And that's really what the issue is for that. But the idea that New Zealand will change its law to benefit a private company is just appalling. It's this is the third time that I'm aware of that that John Key's government has done that. They did it with The Hobbit. They changed labor law at the behest of the studios in Hollywood that wanted the law changed, or they said they would take production out of New Zealand and move it to, I've forgotten where they were going to send it, to Ireland or France or somewhere. Anyway, and so the government capitulated and changed the law exactly as Hollywood wanted it. And the other time they did it was with the copyright amendment, the so-called three strikes law. Media conglomerates came to the government and said, you will change your law. And John Key's government said, okay, how shall we change it? And they ended up putting in the three strikes provision, the entertainment conglomerates, the American entertainment industry, didn't want any probation or whatever. They didn't want any, they wanted to be, you're accused, you're cut off, that's it. And there was such an outcry about that uproar and outcry that the government backed down and they changed the law and they put in three strikes and so forth. Supposedly, the bit about being disconnected from the internet is on hold, but all it will take will be an order in council to cause it to be enacted, and the government could do that anytime it wants. So what a lot of people are looking forward to is when Labor becomes government again and they repeal the law and gives the New Zealand's middle finger to the entertainment industry, which is engaged in another struggle because we have one pay TV service in New Zealand, effectively. There might be some small regional ones, but there's only one national one, certainly, and that's called Sky Television, no relation to the casino. And they have been doing these deals with the internet service providers so that when the national broadband network is completed, that people will be able to watch movies streaming or programs or whatever through Sky and not have it count against their data caps or traffic limits or whatever there ends up being. And the deal means that only their service will be allowed to have this free pass. So Netflix has been looking at coming to New Zealand, and there's another company, the name of which escapes me at the moment. I believe they're Australian. And they were looking to do the same, but they can't come up with these deals with the ISPs because Sky City has made that impossible. Now, that's anti-competitive practice, and it's perfectly legal. And, of course, the current government will look the other way because they think the market is somehow delivering because people don't have to use Sky. They can use another service, neglecting the fact that Sky has this huge commercial advantage because the bandwidth used to watch these movies, and it's quite a lot of bandwidth, will be free. Whereas for any competitor, you'll have to pay whatever the market rates are at the time, which means that they're never going to take off. There will never be any competition. And so it's just added to the huge list of things this government is doing wrong. Labor has proposed to extend the child and family, what do you call it, leave, whatever, like for the birth of a child, for instance. And the national-led government says, oh, no, we can't afford that, can't afford that. Something like $130 million or $300 million, I've forgotten what it is. It doesn't matter because they're going to give nearly $1 billion to the farming industry. Not to individual farmers, mind you, but just kind of largesse to the farming industry. That's the backbone of the National Party and always has been. And yet they can't afford to give brand new mothers, a few more weeks off with their newborns. And the government has no sense. Unless you've got money to pay them to get what you want, they're not interested in listening. So that is some of what's going on in New Zealand at the moment. And one final thing that caught my eye was that there was a story this week that cell phone, yeah, pardon me for a second, I've got another frog in my throat. This time I didn't bother turning it off, as you can see. Anyway, these cell phone companies in America have agreed under pressure to a national system of disabling cell phones that are reported stolen. And the idea basically is that it will help dampen down the market for stolen cell phones because it's not going to be easy to get them to get them reconnected. Well, in New Zealand, there's a similar situation in that if a phone on any particular network is stolen, the owner can notify their provider, Vodafone or Telecom or 2Degrees or whatever, and they will disable that phone, that handset, on their network. But that doesn't stop somebody from putting a SIM from a different network in there and using it on that. So they're talking about working together through their industry to come up with the system itself. Now, I don't know that that's actually going to happen because there's competitive reasons why they may not want to. They don't like working with each other on much of anything. But it is a really good idea. And obviously, because that's why the cell phone companies in the U.S., well, they didn't agree to it. They were forced into it against their will. And so that's, I guess, part of why I'm a little bit pessimistic that they will go along, that they will do it on their own here. But we shall see. It was kind of interesting to me that there was this U.S. story that also had a New Zealand angle to it or whatever. And speaking of the U.S. and New Zealand, I'll probably talk about this more when it happens, but there are U.S. soldiers coming to New Zealand, not to invade or anything, but for, hang on, I'm going to pause this time. Oh, that was a big old cough. Anyway, there are U.S. soldiers coming to New Zealand to engage in joint exercises with New Zealand Defense Forces. And the reason this is a big deal is because it hasn't happened for a very long time. I read in the paper that it was 20 years, but I think it's got to be longer than that. Probably the better part of 30 years, because things have been chilly between the U.S. and New Zealand ever since New Zealand went nuclear free in the 80s. And the U.S. suspended its defense obligations under the ANZUS Alliance. ANZUS, of course, stands for Australia, New Zealand, U.S. And but things have changed. Times have changed. Two Democratic presidents, Clinton and Obama, have been much friendlier to the U.S. To New Zealand than the Republican presidents have been since the nuclear free issue came up. And recently, of course, President Obama signed a deal with Australia to station troops in Australia, partly to make it closer to Southeast Asia, which the current administration and I think most defense analysts in the U.S. will think is going to be a much more important region for defense issues in the years ahead than the Middle East is currently. And I think they're absolutely right, but that's beside the point. So it's in the U.S.'s strategic interest to be get operational readiness with the friendly nations of the region, and that especially includes New Zealand. And so that's what's behind it. They're going to be engaging in various sorts of maneuvers and stuff in the central North Island. And I don't know much more about it at this stage. I suppose I don't really need to. They did do some low-level exercises at Whenuapai Air Base north of Auckland recently. It wasn't, you know, any major war games or anything. It was just kind of a, I don't know why they were doing it, unless it was, it had something to do with some air show or something. I don't know. So this is just another indication of how the defense relationship has changed between the U.S. and New Zealand in recent years. And this is something that both parties have been working on, Labor and National. It's sort of a truly bipartisan idea to try to get better relations full stop with the U.S. because successive governments have wanted a free trade agreement with the U.S., which, of course, I think is a bad idea. But that's a whole nother topic. So those are some of the things that have been going on in the news that I haven't been able to talk about because I've been so distracted. And now I have a voicemail message.
Hi, you've won the lovely trip to Albany, New York. Just factory reply now.
That was, of course, Roger Green, who was extending my phone line for another month. And coincidentally, could have been reading from the latest fax we got on the Two Political line. I don't know why I get faxes for trips and insurance and whatever on the Two Political voice line, but I never get them on the Emrin's voice line. It would be so handy if I did, because then I wouldn't have to have people ring up to keep it renewed. But obviously, the Emrin's phone line actually gets used, and the Two Political one doesn't. But hey, that's all right. And actually, Jason and I recorded a Too Political about a month ago. And because of everything that was going on, I just couldn't get it edited. And a couple weeks later, he said, well, why don't you just forget it? It's been too long now. So I did. And we'll get around to recording one of these days. This is something that will interest probably no one, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I have a portal site, which I have mentioned, I think, at amerinz.com, amerinz.com. No podcast, no nothing, just amerinz.com. And all it is ever meant to be is basically like a brochure of everything Amerinz, everything that I do, my podcasts, my blog, my videos, a bit about me, although that's going to be expanded. And I recently set that up as its own site. It was actually a subsite of amerinzpodcast.com. And the only reason I did it is because I could. I had free hosting with the domain, and I just never bothered to use it. And I thought, oh, well, why not? It's very limited. It's got low bandwidth, and it's got very little storage. But it's perfect for that because I don't actually store any files with it apart from some HTML files, and that's it. So it was ideal for that. But I'm ultimately going to be putting something on there about a project that I'm working on. And I will be providing more details about that soon. But that's kind of a teaser of what I'm up to. But it's the same site that I've had for ages. I just have, as I said, put it on its own host now so that it doesn't interfere with amerinzpodcast.com anymore. Now, that is it. I have missed birthdays. I've missed podiversaries. I've missed all kinds of things. And I'm going to try to get back into the swing of things and get better about that. I've got to get myself organized. I still obviously have some projects to do around the house as well. But with any luck, if I'm able to podcast more often, I won't forget to acknowledge these important dates and things as I used to. But that's it for today. I don't know. Who knows? I might do another one this week. You just never know. I might be wild and crazy. But that's it for today. Have a great rest of the week. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amerinz Podcast at amerinzpodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amerinzpodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.